Coming up on Tech News Today, Sparrow alights on iOS. Nokia's working on a tablet. Kevin Rowe's working on a new job with Google. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Beware, this is Tech News Today for the Ides of March 15th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly, all streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zachter.
I'm Jason Howell.
And very happy to have Mr. Will Harris from channelflip.com along with us again today. Welcome back, Will.
Hello, it is a pleasure to be here from slightly strange time difference, England.
How is England after our daylight saving time went into effect? Has it affected England greatly?
My sleep patterns are all over the place. Honestly, Tom, it's like something in the galaxy is just rearranged. It's like somehow the sun is in a different position in relation to America, but it's not, but it's England, but it's science. Really, who knows?
I know it's apocryphal probably, but I love the quote. That's attributed to several different Native Americans, depending on where you read it, that only the U.S. government would think you could cut the top off of a blanket, sew it to the bottom, and have a longer blanket regarding daylight saving time.
I've seen that quote. It was floating around Twitter.
Yeah. Well, we apologize for messing with the space-time continuum, but we have some good stories to talk about today. First of all, Sparrow, a very popular email client on the Mac, has leapt, or shall we say flown, to iOS.
They found a new nest.
It is. The app offers a unique UI as well as compatibility with most IMAP accounts. However, as much as people love it because it has the kind of swipey goodness that the best apps have and is infinitely preferable
to
the native mail app.
Very similar to Twitter for iPad, where you've got the various pages and you can swipe back and forth.
You can swipe through conversations, up and down, all of that. It is not allowed to use background processing for push. It could use it. Ars Technica spoke to developers Dominique Leica and Din Vet Hoa to find out why, and they said to use standard push notifications, Sparrow would have to store your username and email address for every user's account on a remote server. That requires them to be very secure, and rather than risk your security, they're not doing it until they're certain that they can handle it. They did create a workaround which used the VoIP API to run in the background and only check to see if there was a new email. It wouldn't have had to store any of your private email remotely. It would all happen on the device. Din told Ars, Sparrow would then have been suspended, meaning it didn't use any CPU cycles. iOS would take care of the persistent connection, and it wouldn't use much battery since nothing would be going back or forth on the network. However, Apple said, you can't do that. That is using the VoIP API for something that doesn't provide any VoIP technology, so we're not going to allow it. We're not going to allow that hack. We're not going to allow that workaround. So instead, Sparrow doesn't have push.
Sparrow is sort of, I equate it kind of to Tweetbot for Twitter. Some people who just aren't happy with the default apps that, let's say, iOS gives you or some of the bigger companies give you. Sparrow has been really, really popular, I know, especially with OS X fans to manage email. So I'm really happy to see it coming to iOS. Sounds like they've got a little ways to go. I've been playing around with it a little bit, and it's one of those things where if I really, really hated the iOS mail experience, I'd probably love this. But right now, it just feels different, and like I don't know where I'm going. So depends on what you're looking for.
I've got to see the videos on this thing. It looks really clean and simple. But one of the problems with iOS in general is you can't just switch your default mail app. If you have links in a web page that send you over, it should send you to the regular mail app, correct? You can't just switch my default to Sparrow, because otherwise, that's what I read this morning. I'm just trying to double check that.
Yeah.
Same thing with the browsers.
What you can do is, because you can, of course, import a bunch of email accounts into Sparrow, you can choose what you want your default account to be in Sparrow.
Right. But you can't make it a default app that every time you want to call up a mail application, it's going to call up iOS's mail application, not Sparrow, but directly, like you could do on a desktop or something.
Yeah, it looks that way to me, too. That's, it's also not free. It's $4.
It's $2.99. Yeah, $2.99.
$3.
Will, do you care about this sort of thing? Because I don't. I hate to admit it, but I don't really use email clients.
I massively care. I am an absolutely huge fan of Sparrow. I've had it since like the first beta came out on the Mac. I find, you know, on the desktop, Mac Mail is really slow. It's slow to search. It doesn't have great labeling, not great Gmail functionality. So I'm a big fan of Sparrow on the desktop. When I saw this morning that it was out on the iPhone, I got straight on there. I paid my $3, or I think it's like £1.99 over here. Straight in, set it all up, and I absolutely love it. After like half an hour, I'm completely in love. I think what's really interesting is that Lauren Brichter, who was the guy that originally built Tweety for the iPhone that then became Twitter when Twitter hired them, he's actually an advisor to Sparrow, to the company that makes it. And I think that really shows there are so many design cues from Twitter and particularly from the old Tweety app, actually. And I used to find myself, when I was in Apple Mail on the iPhone, like the number of times that I'd try and pull down to refresh my mail and nothing happened, and I would be really cheesed off. Like I would do that twice a day, I think, after being in Twitter. So the ability to open up my mail on my iPhone, pull down, refresh, done. I love it so much. And I realize that email isn't a big deal for most people, but for me, it's brilliant.
Is this an indication of how deficient the iOS app universe is? Because, you know, there's new mail apps launching on Android every day.
Yeah, and you can make it a complete replacement experience if you want to. It sounds like that's kind of the big difference here is, yeah, it's a new mail app for your iOS, but it doesn't replace the installed mail app as far as like regular kind of behaviors within the phone.
But are they as pretty as Sparrow? Do they work as smooth?
Sparrow looks actually very good looking. But I mean, you know, in the case of Android and mail apps, yeah, there are a ton of different apps that replicate. And is it, you know, as pretty as Sparrow or as pretty as the default? I guess that's very subjective to each person. But you have the ability to do it if you want to.
All right. Well, people are very excited about Sparrow. I just use webmail. I don't even use a client anymore.
You don't want to bother with IMAP settings or any of that, those things? Unified inbox, is that fun? No?
Unified inbox is a pain in the ass, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, so is multiple sign-in in Gmail. That doesn't really work very well either, but
I just have
that's
it all
the way
going
that
to
I use
one
it.
Box, filter it into folders.
Oh, yeah.
Done. And then I never read bacon.
Well, you're better than us.
Let's go on.
Just a better.
I sit corrected. Let's go on to Nokia, confirming that they are, in fact, working on a tablet.
Yeah, so Digitimes previously reported that Nokia was going to produce 200,000 units of a device, a 10-inch ARM-based tablet. And now the Nokia design chief, Marco Ahtisaari, he claims he's spending a third of his time on creating a tablet for Nokia in an interview with Finnish magazine. I'm not going to even try that one. A Finnish magazine, let's just say that.
Sure.
And, quote, "We continue to eye the tablet space with interest, but have made no specific announcements," said a company spokesperson. Of course, the design chief didn't say that it's going to run Windows 8, although everyone thinks it has to be Windows 8.
It's Nokia. They're running Windows Phone on everything. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll run Windows Phone on a tablet.
They actually have leeway with Windows Phone when it comes to Nokia. They're allowed to do things that other manufacturers can't, but it would be insane for them to introduce, what, an Android tablet?
A Symbian tablet.
Symbian camera.
iOS.
Why not just be... Migo. Return to Migo, which is now Tizen, I think, but it has to be Windows 8.
Palm.
Not fun.
No.
That is not
open source.
Web OS. That sure. That's just sad.
It's got to be Windows 8.
I have to say, when they say that the Nokia design chief is spending a third of his time on this tablet, it's like it sort of sets it up to fail, if you ask me. I don't imagine that Jonathan Ive sat at Apple and was like, oh, I'm going to design an iPad in a third of my time. I sort of imagine that he probably worked on it like a lot. And so the idea that like the Nokia design chief is like, that'll be one day in three on the new Nokia tablet doesn't really fill me with a lot of confidence.
Well, now, wait a minute. Johnny Ive was also designing iPods and MacBooks. He didn't spend 100% of his time on the iPad. I wouldn't think.
Well, I think surely by the time they were launching the iPad, all the rest of that stuff was locked down. That was probably handed off to the sort of like junior Johnnies in the corner. And I sort of imagine that he just sat in a lab, like sort of surrounded by iPad prototypes, just doing sleeping, breathing iPad. Maybe the note really harsh to Marco Artesari. Maybe he's just the most talented man in the world.
Maybe Artesari's counting sleep. Like, I sleep a third of the time, and then a third of the time I design the tablet, right. And then the other third is like going to the bathroom.
Or we could speculate wildly what the other two thirds, what he's doing there. What other things are Nokia? Are they working on a car? No, probably not. Another phone? Yeah, probably. A camera? What else are they going to do?
Or maybe he has enough other commitments that Nokia said, let's just say a third of his time because he has other obligations and we'll just tell that to publications and then they'll just believe us.
Hey, so, I
think that's a pretty arbitrary number.
I was surprised that they even bothered to go and confirm this rumor, frankly. So the fact they haven't given us any other details and say he's working on it a third of the time, I think that's fine.
I mean, I'm just still curious about what the Nokia tablet's going to offer that's going to be specifically different compared to every other manufacturer that can put out tablets. Windows 8 isn't like Apple's OS where you're locked down, this is your only manufacturer. There's going to be tons of different tablets out there. So Nokia, what's their only advantage? They are buddies with Microsoft. Maybe they get early access. What do they get here? What makes them different?
They're buddies with Microsoft. They get early access. That's probably what makes them different, frankly.
You know what they've got? Marco Artesari.
That's right. That's right, Will.
I think they got personality. That's what I was expecting you to say.
They walk personality, talk personality. All right. You know what else has personality? Anonymous. Lots of personalities. We just don't know who they are. But this week, a modified Ubuntu distro came out, dubbed Anonymous OS, was released on SourceForge, promised to give you a lot of security tools, asked that you not use it to hack web pages, just use it to keep yourself secure, came with Tor, a lot of other things. In fact, Boing Boing has a good list of all the packages that come in Anonymous OS. They're the kinds of things you would expect, like Anonymous HOIC, DDoSim, Pylorus, SlowLorus, Tor's Hammer, SQL Poison. These are all good security pen test kind of stuff that you could use for ill. Anon Ops, the Twitter account that is run by the folks who speak for Anonymous on occasion, says that this OS is fake and, quote, wrapped in Trojans. Anonymous OS replied saying, that's silly, this is Linux. And, quote, if any user believes that Anonymous OS is wrapped in Trojans or backdoored by any law enforcement company or hacker, please don't download it. So they're telling people, don't believe us, don't download it. 26,000 people have downloaded it already. We don't know if they saw this response before they did. Rick Ferguson, director of Trend Micro's European security research efforts, told the BBC that it looked like a functional OS with a lot of pre-installed tools that can be used for things like vulnerabilities or password cracking. And others have called it an pale imitation of Backtrack, a well-known Linux distro with similar aims. Question is, would anybody in their right mind download this because it's called a non-OS at this point?
Yeah, and who's using the reverse psychology in this situation? A non-ops or Anonymous OS? Saying, there are no Trojans here. Don't download it if you think there are going to be Trojans, which could mean...
I'll show you.
Right.
And I'll then download people say, it anyway.
Right, exactly.
But these you can get these tools anyway, right? You don't need to get this version of Linux. You can, if it's a Ubuntu based, go get Ubuntu and then get
and then
these apps
these
if
tools.
You want.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's nice. Backtrack is nice because you don't have to go and download them all individually and compile them, right?
Right?
That's what's cool about it. However, if there's even the slightest shred of doubt that somebody has packaged some nefarious software in here, I'm not downloading it.
It's an operating system. That's the crazy thing. It's not like, oh, well, it's just an application or two. This is the whole dang operating system. The whole thing could be reporting what you're doing. It seems like it just seems like a horrible like FBI trick. Like, oh, yeah, Anonymous has an operating system. Why don't you install it? Oh, we're going to find out what you just did there. It's just like it's like bait.
It wouldn't have to break the security of Linux to put a little spy app that called home to FBI all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody will probably find that if it's there because the security companies are pouring
all
over. Or
did Anonymous send stuff back to the FBI just to make it seem like it's the FBI? I don't know.
It's like some kind of twisted operating system version of Inception.
Yeah.
You have to sort of jiggle your mouse in a circle on the desktop to try and work out if you're really working for the FBI or not.
I'm actually running BOS inside the FBI spyware that was running inside of the Anon OS.
All within a VM.
Within a VM. It wasn't even a real operating system. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Netflix. Netflix streams thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly. What that means is you save time, You save hassle and you save money, not necessarily in that order. So go check it out for free. Netflix.com/twit. Get unlimited access to all of the TV shows and movies you could dream of, like in an Inception, for instance. Go check it out. And if you already have Netflix, pass along the URL to someone else. Netflix.com/twit. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Breaking news this morning, Liz Gaines at All Things D says our good friend Kevin Rose got a new job.
Yeah, I was right in the middle of the social hour, and what do you know? A link was posted in chat that Kevin Rose has been hired by Google.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, it's a little company. Startup. They're trying to do some social
startups.
Stuff. So there's a little bit of question at this point as to what exactly went down. All Things D reports that possibly the entire Milk team, which is only 8 people, has been acquired, which could net each person up to $2 million each, a talent acquisition. TechCrunch is reporting that this entire deal could be between $15 and $30 million, which was driven up in part with a bidding war, by a bidding war with Facebook, who was also interested in acquiring Milk. Now, of course, Milk is the company that Kevin Rose founded and is the CEO of, and manages a team of 8 people. Oink, which we reported yesterday, is shutting down. So Milk is basically the team that made Oink. Reportedly, neither are actually being bought by Google. Google is shutting down everything as planned. And obviously you have export options on Oink. Their website is going to shut down on the 31st. The Milk staff just moved into a new office. Of course, at the time, I figured, well, they're probably going to hire a few people and they need some more room. They had a small office before. No one really knows exactly the terms of this. Google is not commenting. Rose has not responded to any journalist questions for comment. So there's a little bit of people familiar with the matter kind of stuff that are providing details to the press. Apparently, according to All Things D, Rose is starting Google on Monday. He's going to report to his new job to help them with their social initiative. Okay, well, when I hear that, I say, is he going to work for Google Plus?
Yeah.
I mean, that's their social initiative, right?
And that's built into everything.
That's built into everything.
So that could mean all kinds of things.
As disgruntled Google employees tell us all the time.
I'm pretty sure if you just take Kevin Rose's Twitter account and just migrate all those people to Google Plus, you'll like double the number of people on Google Plus overnight. So maybe that's what they're doing.
That's a really different kind of hire. Huh?
Well, I mean, the thing is he's a big name in technology. He's got millions of Twitter followers. He was a suggested user back in the day and has figured out how to use that to his advantage to promote a lot of his projects. He's got a very successful YouTube account where he's throwing up not only professional videos, but kind of off-the-cuff stuff. And
he's got experience launching a television network with Revision 3.
Exactly.
So YouTube could certainly take advantage of some of that knowledge. They own Next New Networks now.
Mm-hmm. No, nobody's mentioned Revision 3 yet, but that certainly came to mind. He's also got experience with possible Google acquisitions. Back in 2008, there were talks that Google wanted to buy Digg for upwards of above $100 million. For whatever reason, those talks fell apart. But he may be familiar enough with dealing with some of the folks over there that he knows what is a good deal at this point. And I also, and this is not even any private digging, you could do the same that I could. I went back to his Google Plus account, went back a few months. He had publicly checked into Google headquarters on January 31st. He had publicly gotten a Nexus phone and been really excited about it on March 10th.
Where did he get that Nexus phone?
Well, he could buy it at a store. I guess.
Google Store?
Well, yeah, exactly. Matt Cutts had said, cool, winky face, when he got his Nexus phone. So,
cool, I totally gave it to you.
I totally know you.
That's what a winky face is short for.
We're going to work next to each other. So, again, this is all speculation.
Right.
And we don't know exactly what's going on. But I would bet that bringing his kind of geek star power to the Google Plus brand and possibly integrating into YouTube somehow makes sense.
So I think one of the bigger things beyond the celebrity aspect is the fact that Kevin's been successful at building a social network with Digg. Like, if he has community support, because he can take a project and make it interesting to people. Like, oh yeah, I want to go to that. And one of the things with that Whitaker blog post the other day saying Google's all about social anyway, so it's in every single product they do, is that it's hard to get people to just show up. It's not about sheer numbers of people in a location. It's really about them participating and creating a community that was around like Dig for a while. It was like the top thing. It's what you wanted to be on. The Dig effect was it was like the Slashout effect was a thing. It kind of waned a bit, but the thing is, if you can get a bunch of people super excited about something and they're willing to participate, I mean, that's the kind of thing that he needs to bring to something like Google Plus, because right now it's kind of all those headlines, it's a ghost town. Yeah, there's a lot of users, but is anybody actually using the thing? And maybe he can help with that.
And it's unclear as to whether the entire 8-person milk team is going to move over to Google or part of the team.
But it reminds me of when Gowalla was bought by Facebook, and Facebook said, we're not buying Gowalla, but we're moving most of the team over, and the investors somehow got some of their money back.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if there's some arrangement. We don't know what the arrangement would be, but if there's some arrangement for the investors to get their money back out of milk in this situation.
Exactly. Well, and you figure hiring Kevin Rose is one thing, but hiring a team of engineers and designers to work on something makes me think, well, I mean, they could start with a great Google Plus mobile app.
Sure.
Because they don't have that yet.
Absolutely. They might be
thinking,
I'd
love to see it.
Let's have some Google Plus spinoffs, maybe a suite of apps that are location-based and picture-sharing-based.
So, yeah, hire people who obviously have talent, had a product that didn't get widespread adoption, but they could if they were Google. At least at first.
Now, Sarah, I mean, it's not a big secret with our audience that you know Kevin very well. Are you a person familiar with the matter? Come on.
No, I am not.
You can tell. It's just us. Nobody's listening.
Turn
off your
right?
podcast.
Oh,
can I just say, just to move on from that horribly awkward segue, Tom, has anybody been to dig.com recently? I just went there, and it's horrible. Like, it's grim.
Well, talking about a ghost town, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it looks like they've taken all the great design work that Daniel Burke did and just completely undone it, and it's horrible.
Well, you know, Dig is still pulling in some pretty impressive page views per month, but I agree with you. It's not the same Dig it used to be. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm actually really surprised that Kevin Rose going to Google is not at the top of Dig.
Maybe he's
saying
going
something, I guess.
To do dark tips.
Yeah.
For YouTube.
Maybe. You're right. That's the secret,
Tom.
You've cracked it.
It's all out now. All right. Let's move on to a different Google story. Wall Street Journal has a big story that Google is going to announce new search engine tweaks that will roll out over the next few months, presenting more facts and direct answers to queries at the top of the search results page, aiming to provide more relevant results. They quote Amit Singhal talking about semantic search and how they'll match search queries with a database containing hundreds of millions of entities they've been building up over the past 2 years. Could mean more relevant ads. Danny Sullivan over at Search Engine Land looked at the story and said, none of this is new. Google's been doing this all for years. In fact, they started arguably doing semantic search in 2003. They certainly blogged about adding it to the algorithm 2009 and 2010. Honestly, it sounds, according to Danny, like Google is just going to ramp up showing results that come from its Google Squared technology, which is that semantic search, as well as what's been built since its Freebase MetaWeb acquisition. Which are databases that try to feed these sort of like you typed in a query and it gives you the answer at the top. I mean, we've all seen that where you type in like, hey, can you tell me how many pesos $50 is? And instead of just giving you links, it will give you the answer at the top of your search results page. I guess they're just going to ramp that up and provide more of it, but it's not something that's new. So Danny suspects maybe this is Google PR trying to get out ahead of the race with Facebook and make Google look more innovative in the eyes of the public.
Well, some people were calling this ripping off Bing. That was another thing. People were like, it's a decision engine now. You'll get the data right up front. You don't go to websites because you'll get the data from the front page. And I don't put much stock in that either. I mean, the thing is, Google, they've talked about this for a while, and I've used it quite regularly. When you type in the weather, it'll give you the weather right there instead of having to click a link. And I could have sworn there was like a bunch of press conferences where they talked about saying stuff like, you don't need to click stuff anymore when you get to Google. We're not just going to be a set of links. So the fact that, like what Danny Sullivan was saying, is like, yeah, they have been saying this because we've been covering this for a while, and yeah, it's kind of nice to actually get the data you want up front. The other thing is they can't control the results anyway. You can Google bomb almost anything. Check out a certain political presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm. Rick Santorum.
Right, you look him
Everybody
up.
Everybody knows.
You look that up, and you're not going to see what Santorum wants up their front, right? The thing is maybe Google can protect its image a little bit because some people will blame Google or the search engine for the results they get instead of what's actually popular. So it could control the message a little.
Wow, that's all we have to say about that, folks.
I have my thoughts. I don't feel like I have that hard of a time getting what I want out of Google search, to be honest. I know my way around Google search because I'm used to it. Sure, they could improve it. I'd love Google Plus Search Your World to just be gone forever. It's so bad. But otherwise, yeah, go nuts, Google. But it's not as if I feel like it's a horrible search engine that is failing me. I just don't.
And I'm just going to go back in time and do that.
Thanks. Thanks for making us relive that. It had nothing to do with your point. Let's call attention to it by talking about it a lot.
Our last story is about a thing on Tech News Today where it's something.
Interplay's Brian Fargo has raised close to $1 million, contributing directly or having fans contribute directly in his Kickstarter project to fund Wasteland 2. Anybody play Wasteland back in the day?
No. You did?
No?
It would look something like this, I believe.
Bit like that.
This was it on the Commodore 64.
Oh, it's an old game.
Oh, yeah. It's an old game.
Okay. Brian Fargo has worked on Fallout. He's worked on Baldur's Gate, Bard's Tale. Wrote on his Kickstarter page that this was probably the last chance for a Wasteland sequel to get made because basically top-down RPGs got no interest from publishers. And he had a huge response. 8 backers paid over $10,000 to earn attendance at a private party with members of the Wasteland 2 team, as well as get a shrine to their honor inside the game. Minlang Tan, the founder of peripheral company Razer, you know, the folks who make the Switchblade, all of that kind of stuff, gave $10,000 and an apology saying, I pirated Wasteland back in the day, a couple decades ago. I feel bad. So here's $10,000. Hope that makes up for it. Brian Fargo's like, that more than makes up for it. So following on the Double Fine Kickstarter, this seems to show that, hey, maybe there's something to this idea of, like, you got a good game idea that the game industry isn't interested in, you can still get it published.
Yeah, I wish indie movies could be a little bit more like this. Kickstarter is the place to be, absolutely, especially if you have known names and an idea that people remember and it's very beloved. I mean, there are a lot of Kickstarter projects that are awesome and get funded and it's a completely new idea, which I think is really what Kickstarter was meant to be. I am an entrepreneur. I just don't have that kind of money. Let's crowdsource the whole thing. But this is extremely impressive. And it seems like we're hearing more and more of these stories. Somebody got $2 million, even though they only asked for $50,000 in 48 hours type of a thing.
Will, do you think this is a sign of the times that we'll see more and more and more of this, or is it just sort of a flash in the pan, a weird blip on the radar, and this is not sustainable? People will stop donating this amount of money.
No, I think it could be the start of something enormous. I think it could go on to be pretty revolutionary. I think we've seen funding models for media and gaming and all those sort of creative arts go under a fairly substantial shift over the last few years, and I think we're really only at the beginning of it. I think we're seeing everything from, you know, the Obama campaign in 2008 to Kickstarter to all the sort of creative projects now that are getting funded just by individuals. I think that we're seeing the sort of rise of the individual funder. I think that's only going to continue to get bigger over the next decade. My only beef is that Kickstarter, you can't use it if you're in Europe. It only works in America. So all us lovely Europeans with great ideas or who want to donate to great things, we just can't do it.
I wonder if someone could start their own Kickstarter, not Kickstarter fund, but maybe they need a Kickstarter fund to get it going. But could someone replicate it in Europe? Is it just that Kickstarter doesn't want to deal with negotiating a new set of regulations?
I think it's a legislation thing. I think the, you know, rules about taking money from people in Europe start to get a bit complicated. But I think there's plenty of European knockoffs of amazing American companies, so I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
There's got to be somebody who could figure out how to navigate the regulations to make that happen, I would hope. It's just whether somebody's willing to do that or not, because that seems like
Kickstarter's got such a great brand name by now.
Right, but if you can't use it, then you've got an open market to play in if somebody will do it. Or maybe Kickstarter will eventually move into Europe. I hope so, because I would like to see this kind of thing happening all over the world, not just in the United States, for sure. Let's move on to the news fuse. I have to say this, though. Fourth and Beck says channel flip starter.
Ooh.
It rhymes.
Nice.
iFixit does what it does best and tore apart the new iPad. Inside is a giant 11,560 milliamp hour battery, which explains how the iPad can manage to have the same battery life as the previous iPad with the high-res screen and the LTE. That's about double the battery that the iPad 2 contained. That's a laptop battery is what that is.
No kidding.
Yeah, apparently it takes about twice as long to charge, too. Got to do it overnight a little bit more often. Cloud-based service Encapsula announced their research shows that 51% of website traffic is non-human. Zombies. Aliens? No, actually, it's not really that interesting. No. Most of it's just automated software programs. Many programmed for the intent of malicious activity. Boo! Approximately 49% are genuine humans, but we are certain that someday it will also include zombies. They're coming.
A moment.
You gotta love connected zombies.
Yeah.
PayPal introduced its Square competitor called PayPal Here. The triangular-shaped device attached to an iPhone via the headphone jack and works in conjunction with the new PayPal Here app. The merchant only needs to punch in the amount, and the buyer can swipe the card. Additionally, you can use the camera to scan a credit card or checks. PayPal charges a flat 2.7% fee.
Bloomberg Business Week reports that after Apple found out that Path was uploading contact information, CEO Tim Cook called Path's Dave Morin into the principal's office at Apple headquarters, where he and other executives proceeded to grill him. Same report also profiles a service called Gtechna, which gets apps to the list of Apple's most popular program slots. Its methods were not detailed.
Maybe Dave Morin was in a better mood after Britney Spears visited the Path office yesterday.
He probably feels better now.
Probably.
He's toxic.
Yes, he did it. He went all the way. Playbook users.
That's better than womanizer.
Get excited.
Tom, we can go your knowledge of
Hit him, baby.
One more time.
Thank you.
Playbook users, it's your time to shine. Just a few days after announcing a keyboard dock for the Playbook, RIM confirmed that it will bring BlackBerry 10 to the tablet at some point after the launch of the first BB10 handsets.
It's just
They're coming for you, iPad.
It's just getting better for them.
Sorry.
Cisco announced it's buying itself a little something. The NDS Group, a software maker that specializes in content streaming and security to the tune of $5 billion in cash. The purchase is meant to bolster Cisco's own video service like VideoScape. NDS currently includes clients like DirecTV and British Sky Broadcasting.
Hey, Will, you want to make a quick $25,000?
Sure.
All right.
Apparently he doesn't need it.
Here's all you need to do. Go get yourself hired at Yahoo. Can you do that?
I think I can probably have a go, yeah.
And it doesn't matter what job you get hired in. Just get any job at Yahoo. The CEO and founder of Yammer announced by Twitter today that any Yahoo employee who moves to his company in the next 60 days will receive a $25,000 signing bonus.
So all I've got to do is get hired at Yahoo, then get hired at Yammer, and then I get my $25,000.
Yeah. And you got 60 days to do it. So good luck.
Come on.
Wow. Yonhap News Agency reports that South Korea fined Samsung, LG, and Pantech and several carriers for defrauding consumers by inflating the price of cell phones. The total combined is roughly $40 million. SK Telecom was hit with the biggest fine of all, with nearly $18 million.
You know who likes tequila?
Who?
Microsoft Office.
What? That's what I was going to say.
Exactly.
A little Microsoft. Too much.
Agaves are web extensions to bring third-party functionality to Office clients. According to sources with knowledge of Office 15 plans, web developers will be able to create an area that lets web pages interact with documents and deliver content with extra features. You'll find the Agaves through Microsoft's Office Marketplace or from private standalone Agaves at organizations. So drink up.
And move on to the randomizer. This is pretty cool. A laser printer that unprints your pages being developed in your backyard at the University of Cambridge. Will, a laser unprinter that
Tell
can
me what it does.
It can remove ink without damaging the paper.
It's supposed to be more efficient.
So instead
than
of recycling paper, you just use the same piece of paper. But the ink is gone, as if it was
negatively
out of
charged
the bag.
Toner particles stick to positive regions, and a heat source then fuses the toner to the paper, and you get a blank page.
I wonder if it's like VHS tapes.
I just explained how it prints to it. The unprinter uses very short pulses of laser light that are 1 billion picoseconds to vaporize the toner or ablate it, but leaves the paper undamaged. So it just gets rid of the toner.
So, yeah, it wouldn't be like a tape that's stressed over time. It would be like a perfectly new white or whatever colored sheet.
But you know somebody's going to build...
Without ink.
Somebody's going to build the pointless machine of printing into the unprinter, which then feeds back infinitely. Because somebody's...
It's some kind of metaphysical comment on the pointless machine.
Because they can?
Oh, yeah. That's always the reason.
Sounds like a zombie.
The price of high-powered picosecond lasers need to come down before this can be made a commercial technology.
That'll be pointlessly used.
But as soon as that happens, they figure it's actually pretty efficient. In fact, 20 times more efficient to do this than to print new, you know, like make new paper. So you could just keep using the same paper over.
Well, this is obviously environmentally a much better idea, and also for an office like ours, we're a pretty wireless enterprise, but we do print a decent amount of paper. It'd be great just to not really buy paper that often and be able to reuse it over and over. Awesome. I love this idea.
Yay for trees.
Okay.
Let's check the calendar.
Let's do it. Blizzard has confirmed Diablo 3 is launching on May 15th. Pre-orders are actually starting today on the Blizzard website if you want to get in early. Diablo 3 is going to cost you $60, or there'll be a $100 collector's edition with a little fancy extras.
It's not that bad for a collector's edition.
Yeah. Are you going to pay $100, you think?
I might.
Okay. Well, you can look and see some of the details over at Blizzard. The Amazon App Store is 1 year old. Happy birthday, Amazon App Store. Users can actually enjoy some special birthday discounts this week on such apps like Plants vs. Zombies, Fruit Ninja, Wolf from Alpha, Splash Drop Remote Desktop. They've got a bunch. So if you haven't bought any of those and you're interested in buying some apps, this would be the week to do it, at least at the Amazon App Store. And finally, tomorrow, March 16th, happens to be the big new iPad launch day.
The what?
The new iPad.
Is that like a, it's like a touchpad?
Well, it's like the iPad 2, but without the 2.
Okay.
And it's
but
faster.
But a new instead of the 2.
And it's prettier.
It's a new?
And it's a little heavier.
Okay.
And it's got LTE.
Never heard of it.
Unless you get the Wi-Fi only. So that's tomorrow. But tomorrow was actually the original launch date of the Steve Jobs biography.
And we have a sneak preview.
How did you get that?
Right here.
No, you don't understand.
What?
No, the biography was moved up several months for various reasons.
That's why we have this.
High demand and a death.
Okay.
So.
All right. Let's check what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got some good voicemails. 260-TNT show. Our first one tries to enlighten us on some more internet-connected coffee maker history.
Hey, TNT crew. This is David Ward reporting in from the East Coast. Just calling about that coffee maker that would be internet-enabled. Just a little bit of useless history. The Trojan Room coffee pot at the University of California was one of the first coffee pots equipped with a webcam back in 1991, and it went across the network to a server and showed where the coffee level was so that the guys didn't have to walk all the way across the building and find an empty coffee pot. In 1993, it went online. It went up and ran until 2001. So just a little trivia there about an internet-connected coffee pot. Thanks, TNT.
Did he say UCLA, though?
Sounded like it.
He said University of California.
Yeah. It was the Trojan Room coffee pot, but it was at the University of Cambridge.
Ah.
I can see because UCLA is the Trojans.
Right, making
that mistake. Okay. But yeah, that's right. First webcam over there. Did you use that webcam, Will?
No, I did not. But I am interested in the fact that this sort of internet-connected coffee machine just keeps running and running and running. Like, the Tech News Today public, the viewing public just can't get enough of it. And so I think clearly we do all need to revise the original position that nobody wants this thing. Because clearly everybody wants this thing.
I think
also,
you're right.
Also, all the USC people in the chat room are freaking out. They're the Trojans.
Yeah, nobody
the
corrected
UCLA,
him when he
missed it. The Bruins.
Where are the Cambridge fans? That's what I want to know. All right, we got another voicemail about a way to make sure you get the most out of your data plan.
Hey, TNT crew, just calling in regarding the Andrew Speccarelli versus AT&T, and just wanted to say that he is the exception, not the rule. Most people don't ever use all their data, and to help them, I've created a site called usealltheData.com, and it's a site people can go to near the end of their monthly cycle and basically just use the rest of their data just to make sure they're getting their full money's worth. Thought you might want to check it out. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Find out when your plan cycles.
I love this site. Look at this.
When it's about to cycle, visit usealthedata.com. Find out how much data you have left. Decide how much of that you'd like to use. Type the amount in megabytes into our site. Click use all the data, and it will all get used up.
This is an idea.
This reminds me of the guy who was upset at his dorm room in college that I knew. And so he went and plugged capacitors into all the electrical outlets to run up to, because he didn't have to pay electric, you know, in the dorms.
What did the dorm room do to him?
I don't remember what his beef was, he was really mad at it.
Yeah. Wow.
There are people out there who are starving for spectrum. You're just going to waste it? Come on.
Yeah.
Finish your spectrum, some people don't have as much as you have.
Oh, I'm supposed to use it all up?
You want me to give it to the little girl down
the
street?
Yes, I do. Go use my spectrum. Please, give it to them. Donate it. Just take it off my plate. Take it.
Finally, an email from Chris in Cleveland, Ohio says, I'm writing because I want to bring up a concern I have about the tablet life cycle. Today, phones last about 2 years before they become dated. More like 2 months for Android. Obviously, this is the case more so for Android since there is more variety in hardware and software versus Apple's annual new iPhone and full control of hardware and software updates. Holding on to a phone for more than 2 years, you risk not being able to get the new operating system updates. This hasn't been a major concern for most people because we buy phones at a subsidized rate at around $300 or less, depending on the model. Also, we've been conditioned to get a new phone every 2 years by the carriers with programs like the old new every two from Verizon. Now, applying that model to tablets concerns me. High-end tablets can be pretty expensive, costing from $499 and up. Is the tablet hardware going to last longer than the phone hardware, or will they also start to show their age every 2 years? Are we going to be expected to buy a new tablet every 2 or 3 years to be able to take advantage of all of the operating system updates? Maybe Amazon's Kindle Fire and the rumored Google Nexus tablet have the right idea with a tablet at a $200 price point. Just curious your opinions.
Well, I'm already hearing from people with first-gen iPads that they've slowed down to a crawl. In some cases, you can update to apps, and they don't work that well.
Or certain apps don't work at all, like the Final Cut app,
certain apps
iPhoto.
Don't work at all, so you feel locked out, really, as far as the experience that anybody with a newer version has. So, I mean, yeah, I feel like it's all kind of the same thing. After a couple of years, there are new models out, and companies are less inclined to make sure that everybody is brought into the modern age of the OS if people keep buying the new versions.
I think you can eke out a lifespan of a tablet a lot longer than a phone because you don't have any weird like carriers coming in unless you're talking about one under contract.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to just upgrade your device a lot simpler instead of going, okay, did AT&T approve this Windows phone upgrade? Am I going to get this in 2 weeks or 3 weeks? Your tablet's usually your own device. I know there's a whole bunch of tablets that are available for contract, but if you can get a longer lifespan out of it because it's your device, I think that makes the life cycle a little longer.
Will, do you see this as a problem with tablets?
I think it's a problem with everything, really. I mean, everything that's sort of device-led, the speed of change and the speed of innovation is so fast that it's sort of inevitable that stuff is getting left behind. I mean, think about it. If you have a first-gen iPhone right now, that thing's got to be, like, practically unusable at this point. So I think it's just sort of an inevitable consequence of the onward march of progress.
And I think you're right. It's almost as if the society gangs up on you if you just want to use your old device for the same things you used it for when you bought it. I mean, I guess it would still make calls, right? But there's plenty of things that it won't do anymore. And if you don't keep the operating system updated, you not only lose functionality, but you also may be shut out of services and you're possibly insecure. I mean, security updates require you to have the most recent version of the operating system. So it's almost unsafe not to keep up. So it's kind of dangerous to be saying, well, we're not going to support hardware after more than a couple of years, if that's in fact what ended up happening. I mean, they still support the original iPad, so that hasn't happened yet. But I think it's a good point that tablets are quite a different proposition. All right, that's it for this episode. Oh, Will, were you going to say something? Nope.
I was just going to say that I've just got a first-gen iPad and it still works fine. So
you're good?
No complaints yet.
How long do you think you can hold out?
Probably until tomorrow morning.
Fair enough. All right, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. You can find us on the web at our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. That is the place to go to submit stories for our consideration. We look at those. We look at the votes that you put on them, not just the submissions, but how many people voted it up or down. For instance, the story that was submitted saying that women do not prefer men with beards, I voted down for obvious reasons. But
that is totally true. I mean, that is just outrageous.
Yeah, I think that's wrong. But see, that's what the Reddit is about. I only have one vote. Anybody can vote. So go vote. TechNewsToday.reddit.com. Will Harris, my apologies for this episode.
I think you need to either call it
I think it's Will's fault. He went to a chalet and threw us off.
Hopefully you won't hold it against us and you'll come back.
Oh, Tom, that's awful.
That you'll come back?
No, you dropped another Britney Spears in. Hold it against me as another Britney Spears. What, you weren't?
Oh, now you put me to shame.
I've just done Spears, haven't I?
Hit me, baby, one more time.
Yes, well, Tom, Sarah, Ayaz, Jason, it is always a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. And hopefully see you soon.
Channelflip.com. Don't forget, folks, go there. Enjoy. Any news? Anything to plug?
Twitter.com/Will Harris. And not google.com/Will Harris, as we discovered earlier, because it's not me.
Yeah, don't go there.
It's a great promotion. Promote stuff that you're not at.
Yeah.
Just give out URLs. I'm not at google.com.
It gets, just to make it clear. In case people tried. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv, or you can give us a call. Leave us a voicemail message, 260-TNT-SHOW. Darren Kitchen joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.